You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Today, my guests are Arielle Matisar and Kira Porton-Jones, the co-owners of A Children's Place, Portland's second oldest bookstore after Powell's. Thank you so much for joining me today, Arielle and Kira.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Thank you. Of course. So first of all, I've been familiar with the bookstore for a while, but it wasn't until your 50th anniversary that I kind of learned the lore of the bookstore, how old it is, how much it's meant to the community, how it's moved and changed hands. But how did you two come into ownership? You're the most recent owners. How did you two come into ownership?
Well, I'm going to let Kira tell most of that story because Kira and I have both been connected to the store forever, really. Mm-hmm. But Kira worked here before I did. So Kira, you tell your part of the story first.
Okay. The way I came to the bookstore was I graduated from Bryn Mawr College in 2002, mm-hmm. and I came home with no job. I had a philosophy degree. I didn't expect to use the philosophy degree. I had always loved books and children, but I had figured out by then that I did not want to be a classroom teacher, and I did not want to be a librarian. Hmm. So I was a little lost, and a teacher I knew who I had been babysitting for a very long time was in the bookstore and happened to overhear the owner at the time say that she really needed a new manager. Mm. And she mentioned me. She said she knew someone who loved kids and books, didn't have bookstore experience, but thought I would be really good. So she called me, and I went in for an interview. And I knew immediately as soon as I heard about the prospect that this was what I was meant to do. Wow. I knew, like, right away that this was it.
So, wow.
She told me, I was here for a long time, and she told me, I'm going to interview a couple more people on Monday, so I'll call you Tuesday. Well, that wasn't what happened. She called me on Monday at noon and asked me to come to work at 2. And about a week after she hired me, she left me in charge of the store to go to Hawaii because her son was getting married.
Oh my gosh.
It was nuts. But anyway, the job just kind of fell into my lap, and I was the only full-time employee for many, many years. And it was just, I just loved it from the start because, it was exactly what I wanted. I'm not a people person, but I am a kids and books person.
Right.
So, Arielle's been working on and off since then.
Yeah.
She does so many things.
A couple of years later, the person who hired Kira sold the store to Pam, who owned the store before us. And
right.
Pam had it for decades.
Right.
And then soon thereafter, I came home to Portland, and I was a teacher, and my Oregon teacher's license wasn't in yet, and Kira said, well, why don't you come work at the bookstore? So I came to work with her a little bit then until my license came through, and then I was a teacher for 20-some-odd years. Mm-hmm. But I kept coming back, mm-hmm. and kept together. And then years ago, Kira always said she wanted to own the store. And my husband Ben and I had always said, oh, we would love to be a part of that. And then a few years ago, I got a text from Kira in February saying, are you serious? Would you really do that?
Well, actually, before that, what's funny is that for a while, Pam had said, are you ready to buy the store yet? Are you ready to buy the store yet? And I had stopped being ready to buy the store because I had had two small children. And I said, I can't buy a bookstore right now. I have two small children. That's too much. And finally, Pam was like, I'm ready to retire. If you don't buy the store right now, I'm just going to sell it to someone else.
Whoa.
She was serious. And it was just in time because she's got a little granddaughter now.
Oh.
And that's when Kira sent me the text.
Yeah.
And I remember Ben and I were like, this seems impossible. I can't imagine how we could possibly do this. And I was still teaching at the time. And we decided to just go down the pathway of, could we actually do it?
Mm-hmm.
Until we got to a door that said no. And we just never got there. And a couple of months later, on Kira's birthday, so this is my favorite part of the story.
Oh my gosh.
So Kira started working here. How old were you?
It was a week before my 22nd birthday. And I thought, if I get this job, it will be the best birthday present ever.
And then, so Kira has been here for over half of her life, because on, like, literally on her 44th birthday, we signed the papers to take over the store.
Congratulations. So hard.
Yeah.
The biggest the full circleness of that, that's some rare business right there. That, what in the synchronicity of the I'm supposed to be here and it's cosmically ordained type business is that? That is wild. Does it feel like a divine intervention that it's kind of mapped out this way?
Yeah, it's felt like that since the beginning for me.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And for me right now, it certainly does. I mean, I always said this was always my favorite job. I loved teaching kindergarten, and I love teaching music, and I actually really love teaching graduate school. I've taught all sorts of people. I love teaching. But Ben used to joke, yeah, but your favorite job is the bookstore.
And isn't it that, like, all of these disparate talents that a teacher has to have, like, a teacher is never just a teacher. You have to know everything, and you have to be able to teach it to so many different types of children, of people. There's no one type of person. There's no one type of educator. But do you, I wonder if as an educator, if this isn't like the perfect position, because it would utilize so many of those skills that you built up over the years teaching. Do you see yourself using those skills here at the bookstore?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, it's almost a daily basis when I'm like, Ariel, you should do this because you know just how to handle this because you're a teacher.
Yeah, I mean, from the, you know, lots of people come in worrying about the rate at which their children are learning to read. Mm-hmm. And so we can have sort of informed conversations there. My favorite part of the week is actually when we have a stroller parade on Friday mornings and the store fills with children and we have story time and music.
Fabulous.
That's my favorite time.
Fabulous. I love that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of conversations that are kind of happening in the periphery about how little children are engaging with text, with reading, with like that kind of like all consuming type of reading that explodes your imagination in all these new and exciting ways. What is your experience here with like presenting this new world to kids? Because that's what you're doing. This is a children's bookstore. This is not Powell's. This is for children. So how are you navigating this quote unquote literacy crisis in children?
Oh, I don't think I like the term literacy crisis, because although I really hear what you're saying, and I think it is true. I think children are reading less, and they're reading long form fiction less, and I think it's really concerning.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I think I would rather think of it in terms of the particular moment that we're navigating, in terms of not just a literacy crisis, but in terms of how we all take in information and the amount of information you take in and the sort of bite-sized pieces that we're encouraged to take in,
right,
as opposed to long form thinking. So I see it as situated in a in a bigger story.
Right.
But we definitely see that kids are gravitating more towards graphic novels and those bite-sized pieces.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we're able to do when we have grown-ups come in with some concern around that is have conversations about, okay, well, what would be the long-form fiction that could be palatable to get kids in?
Right.
Because I sort of suspect that part of what's happened at this point is that in schools, there has been a real push to say reading is reading is reading is reading, and it's all reading and it's all great.
Ooh.
And I think that there's a way in which that's really true.
Right.
We love graphic novels. We love illustrators.
Sure.
This is storytelling at its best in a lot of ways, but it is a totally different skill than reading long form fiction
right.
and sinking into a story and letting your imagination be the place where those pictures are coming. And so one of the things that we find ourselves doing a lot, actually, is talking to kids and their grown-ups and helping them find their access point into long-form fiction.
Nice.
Because I think once a kid has that experience of just that one time of, I can't put this down,
mm-hmm.
I have to keep reading it,
yep.
that's the in.
And you just had that experience with your own kid.
I did. So my oldest is 13, and he is somebody who has definitely gravitated towards graphic novels.
Right.
And just this summer, he could not stop reading. He was like, hold on. And I have all these photos of him reading literally while he's putting on his socks, reading while he's having breakfast, because he's in the denouement of the book and
right.
you can't stop when you're at the end, you know? And for him, that was really, really meaningful. And I think that's true for a lot of kids. And either they find their series and so they keep going,
mm-hmm.
or they find their genre, or they find their author. And it's just this doorway into a totally different way of connecting with themselves and ideas and other people.
Right. What you just described, that entry point, I knew immediately what you were describing, because I know that mine was The Phantom Toll Booth.
Yay.
Isn't that everybody knows how old I am now. but that
I
book
must
was
have read that book 40 times as a kid. I love that book.
Seriously, I'll still come back to it every maybe 6 or 7 years as an adult, because
yeah.
it stands. It's still so impactful, but also that it took elements of like a graphic novel. It's an illustrated novel. And so
yeah.
it has that access point too. Now, I'm an author as well. When my book came out in 2023, you could tell that my first book had been The Phantom Toll Booth, because my book is a book with just illustrations scattered throughout. It's not a graphic, it's not graphic literature by any means, but you could see that influence so fiercely in my writing. So
mm-hmm.
having you describe that is like, oh my, you mean other people too? It's like that for everybody? What? How wonderful. How wonderful for listeners also to hear that and possibly have that moment also where they get to think of like, oh, and my first book was XYZ and that's how it made me feel too.
Yeah.
I wonder if motherhood, if there's something about motherhood that kind of enforces this impetus to carry on this legacy, because if I'm not mistaken, most of the owners of this bookstore have been female. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a legacy of women owners.
Right.
I don't.
Mitch, Nicole, and
our husbands are involved as well. So there, it isn't that
everyone's got a thing to do.
Male partners haven't been around,
mm-hmm.
But it has always been spearheaded by the women.
Hmm.
I don't know if they've all. Was Diana mother?
Yeah.
And we've all been mothers. Although, I mean, when Kira and I started working here, we weren't. But since
oh,
we've
that's
taken
so sweet.
Over, yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that there, you know, the world has changed a lot, and women are still the primary caregivers in our culture.
Right.
And the vast majority of children who come into the store with grown-ups come with women.
Right.
Not all of them. There are certainly more men than there used to be. But I do think that there is something interesting in having the experience of raising children alongside raising readers through the bookstore. That's part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just part of who we are in the world. And so, like anything else, that just informs everything that we do.
Right. That is so fascinating. And I really want to unpack that. Like, how you've been there long enough to have seen the sea change where possibly when everyone started, it was all mothers and very few fathers. But we are in a new era now. This is a new epoch where dads are staying home. Moms are out here with their full careers. So when you're you see this change happening? Are you seeing it in real time and you're like noticing, wow, this is happening, this is changing? Or are you looking back and saying, that happened, how interesting?
I think we have a lot more dads with their names and frequent buyer now than we used to.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a frequent buyer program. So every 25 books, we give you a credit back. And yeah, I think we do have a lot more dads. Yeah, I think I notice it more retrospectively because it doesn't feel unusual to have men come in with their kids. And and we have some stay-at-home dads or primary caregiver dads who we know really well. And a few regular dads who come to story time.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
What challenges have you faced as owners, like specifically of a bookstore at this time in this era? Are there specific challenges that have risen up just because of this administration, because of this time that we live in? And then are there challenges that you would have just anticipated running up against because you are women owners? What are those?
Well, I suppose the first challenge that comes to mind for me in terms of living in the times that we live in now, Carrie, I don't know if you think this is true. I think, you know, one of the things that happens in the store is that sometimes one person will come in and they'll be the only person in the store and they'll feel like they have the space to tell us a story about their lives. And oftentimes they want to talk to us about a kid in their lives who they're shopping for, but really they're coming saying, hey, I have a kid who's experiencing challenge. Is there a book for that?
Right.
And whether that's about loss or mental health or just like daily life or school, they come and it's a place where they feel like they can share. And I think the thing that I've noticed in the last few years is that a lot more of what is being shared is situated in what's happening right now in the world.
Right.
And that there is a greater frequency of people coming in feeling fear and grief over children who are experiencing extreme mental health challenges.
Right.
Oof. And I think that that wasn't as true years ago.
Right.
And also the pandemic, like there's not been a complete recovery from that era either.
Sure.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I mean, we're still coming out of that space of everyone staying home.
Yeah, right?
I needed a better timing. When Arielle came in here, I have to tell you, after the pandemic, after people started coming into the store again, and we were left realizing, Pam and I were left realizing, everything was gone. Like, we tried to do author events. It didn't work at all.
Mm.
We tried to bring back story time. It didn't work at all. There were all sorts of things that just felt like we were just tired. We just didn't have the energy to like go and seek those things out anymore when it was that much trouble.
Right.
Arielle came in here. She's like a breath of fresh air. Just like she's injected happiness and energy. And it's like she brought everything back.
Well, I mean, Kara says it as though it was just me, and that's not true at all. I mean, I think the other thing is like people are coming out in a different way. And I think it's not just that we're offering things again. It's that people are wanting them again.
Yeah.
And that there are not enough third spaces for children in our city.
Indeed.
In the world.
Indeed.
And, well, right.
Yeah.
And so, our store is a third space for a lot of kids.
Right.
And it is, for a lot of kids, the very first place they're allowed to go on their own.
Wow.
And sometimes parents will come and tell us that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And with parents we're close with, sometimes they'll ask, hey, can you text us when they're on their way home so I know that they're coming?
Love.
And for a couple of kids, we don't see their parents, but this is a safe space for them.
I love that.
That is really meaningful, I think.
One time years ago, a regular customer came in with her her older daughter and a very young son. We had known them for many years. And she said, he's fixated on being in a store by himself. So would it be okay if we go around the corner Well, he stays here for a few minutes by himself so he can feel what that feels like. And I said, of course, like, this is the place to do that. Yeah. And so they did. And I think it was very, you know, special for him because he had been thinking about it for a long time and it made him feel very big and very, you know.
But I do think that right now it's even more true that children are not offered that independence. And I wonder how much of that is coming out of the pandemic still.
Right.
In that space where we all just stayed home and nobody learned how to go do things on their own. And we just sort of ran out of practice of that.
Yeah.
But the store has always been, it's not just a store. Like, we really become part of people's lives. Mm-hmm. One time a parent called me and she was in a panic. It was when her store was up at 48th. She said, I'm not going to make it to the bus stop to get my daughter in time. Can you go? And I said, of course. So I went to the bus stop to pick up her daughter after school.
Oh.
Her daughter knows me really, and she knew me really well. She got off the bus, saw me, jumped into my arms and just started chattering away. And we got to the end of the block and finally she looks at me and says, oh, where's my mom?
Yeah, I do
it
think
was so great.
One of the incredible things about being 52 as a store is that, you know, children grow up here.
Right.
And then some of them grow up to become employees here, right? We have a couple of really lovely young people who work here, and it's their first job. Mm-hmm. But what a lovely thing for them to have their first job be a place that felt like a second home.
Yeah.
It's a good way to learn how to work in the world.
This is a tremendous responsibility that you seem to have taken on. So, I mean, just from this very, like, outsidery point of view, this seems like breathing to you. It just seems so, you're making it look effortless, that you understand that this is a third space, that you understand that a bookstore is never just a bookstore. A bookstore is many, many things to many, many people, especially, like, to have a bookstore that you love when you are a child and to be able to go there and find safety, sanctity. It's invaluable. It's completely invaluable. Like, you are locked in to that kid's life and their memories forever. Think about the way that those moves really change a kid's life. Like, really, I wouldn't be an author. I wouldn't be doing the things that I do today if it wasn't for the time that I spent in libraries, in bookstores, in those third spaces that are curated for children, that are safe spaces for kids specifically. I just want to give you two so many flowers because of it. Because it really is like one of the most, it's like a, it's an iconic space in the city. It's been open so long, gone through so many owners. And I remember when I talked to Pam Lewis right before the 50th birthday. And how deeply she felt about the importance of every community. She said something that really stayed with me. Every neighborhood, every community has needs, right? You need your walkable. In your walkable community, you need a grocery store. You need a post office. You need a children's bookstore. And I had never thought of it like that. I had never thought of it as such a critical need in a community. But in that conversation, it was very revelatory because I'm flooded with memories of my first bookstore, the library experiences that I have. Yeah. Does it feel, because I'm saying that you seem to be like, you're smiling, you're laughing, you seem to love this job. But do you feel the weight of it also? What you're doing is tremendously heavy, tremendously important to your community. Does that weigh on you, or are these like butterfly wings?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think we define the success of the store through the stories we're telling you, right? Like, these moments are why we do this and why we think it's working.
Right.
We don't really define the success through the profit margin, because that's a bad idea in an independent bookstore. But and we're lucky and we're paying our bills and everything is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the way we define the success of it is how it feels.
Right.
And when Kira and I like really sat down and we're like, are we really doing this together? We we sat down over beers and made a promise that that first our families, our children and our families came first, and our friendship came next. We've been friends since high school.
Oh my gosh.
And after that came the store.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we could do that, then we would keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But that had to be the priority. And so far, mostly that's been true. And when it isn't, we do something different. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of what allows us to do this. I also think, like, you know, there's work that feels like work and there's work that nourishes us.
Right.
And I think this work nourishes both of us.
Right.
And I mean, the store is older than both of us.
Right.
And my hope is that the store will be here when we're gone. So I think of us as the current caretakers.
Right.
And that is not quite as heavy because my hopeful belief in our city is that at some point when we're ready to pass it on, there will be somebody who's ready to give it a different kind of vibrancy.
Is the store is 52 years old. Now it's kind of coming back post pandemic. I know that you're having a lot, you have events, readings, et cetera. How do you, now as the community is, you know, emerging from this haze of COVID, of isolation, and we are very much still navigating that. I'm not even going to try to front like we're not. Knowing that, and knowing that this is the reality of what we're dealing with in our communities right now, how do you see the shop kind of evolving or changing or moving with the community as it evolves? Do you see big changes, or do you stay in the course?
I don't think that we plan in that way. I think that our goal is to maintain a space that helps connect people to each other and themselves through stories and pictures, and that as other ideas come, we try to say yes. Mm-hmm. and go where that goes. So instead of like having a broad plan for what will be in 5 years, I think we're trying to really nurture what we are.
Right.
And then also just be open to the possibilities.
Right.
So when schools say, hey, would you do a book fair for us? And we say, we have no idea how to do that. I guess let's do it. Let's try it. And so we tried it. When people come and ask for specific events, we try and figure out how to make it happen.
Right.
When schools say we can't afford authors, then we try and say, okay, so what if it didn't cost you anything? Mm-hmm. What if there was no minimum purchase? How do we make sure that kids still have access to authors and that it's not about kids with money having access to authors?
Right.
But right. So that we're just continually saying yes to the people who come in with ideas, because books are just creative endeavors, right? Like
right.
It's just, we exist in this room filled with beautiful creative ideas. And so I think part of what happens is when humans come into the space with beautiful creative ideas, we want to say yes.
Yeah.
And I think the more we're able to do that, the clearer the path forward is.
Right. Wow. That was so well said. It brings up like the idea of instead of thinking, and I don't know if this is like, and I don't want to be so binary about it, but I feel like if I had asked that question of a man and his small business, that the answer would have been a lot different. And maybe I'm projecting. I don't know. Could be. It is the time that we live in. But for you, instead of thinking of like the scaffolding of the next 50 years, instead, you're just being like water. You are moving with the, you are rising when necessary and falling when necessary. You are meeting the needs of your community. You're meeting them where they're at instead of trying to project where they're going to be, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
And very intuitive, too. Like, a very intuitive way to run a business.
Well, and maybe also because we're overwhelmed by all of what we're doing. You can't imagine being like, hey, let's plan a new thing.
Huge thanks to today's guests, Arielle Matisar and Kira Porton-Jones. Learn more about A Children's Place at achildrensplacebookstore.com. Or visit the shop at 1423 Northeast Fremont. Don't forget to follow Success Stories at Success Stories PDX. Learn more about me at briannawheeler.com. I'll talk at you next week. And until then, remember, success is what we make it. Bye.